Except that, well, we've got the rest of the flash drive to go. And we're calling it a flash drive because it's just today. And so I encourage you to, you're listening and you're thinking, oh, a pledge drive, how long is that going? Well, just
25
a few
hours.
More hours, actually. So everything has to happen right away. So if you're considering contributing, then this would be the time to do it. The number to call, 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. And by this time tomorrow, we'll just be done with it. So you want to get right down on it. Now, speaking as a trans woman, it's very important to me to have community radio and to have broadcasters like Amy Gooden.
Why is that, Teresa?
Well, because, well, let me contrast with Fox News. Fox News is run by a reactionary organization, and Fox News reflects that by going out and running stories from, I mean, I say stories with scare quotes, from organizations like the Pacific Justice Institute, and that is an anti-trans, anti-gay organization, and they come up with just broad lies, which Fox News promotes as if it were news, and much of the corporate media will then repeat their lies as if they were the truth. For example, there was a story, I think it's been a year or so now, that some fellow at a high school was going into the girls' locker room and, you know, just displaying his arousal and all this sort of thing, and they just made it up out of whole cloth. You know, when actual journalists checked into it, there was nothing to it. They had made it up. Fox News ran with it constantly, and now this is a meme that exists in conservative Americans' brains, that they think that their kids are in danger from trans people. We get exactly the opposite from Amy Goodman, exactly the opposite from KABU Radio, and that's a lifesaver for me, and I think that has contributed to what safety I feel in this region. 877-500-5266 to be a part of it. If you understand, if you're one of the people who understand how vital community radio is to a growth of a possible democracy, then you're one of the people who contribute. And 10% of the people listening to us do. And you will see their bumper stickers on their cars. They are the contributors. Why don't you join them? Why don't you join us right now? 877-500-KABU.
And remember, we have a matching period right now. So
yes,
this is double your money, double your contribution. And for a $60 membership, you can get a copy of this, in case you haven't, of this this recording that Theo Burke did for us, of Amy Goodman's talk last May. You can get a copy of that for a $60 contribution. For $75, you can get a copy of her book, Democracy Now! 20 Years Covering the Movements Changing America. It's extremely informative, and you can get the two of them together for less than $10 a month. It's just an excellent opportunity. 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM, or come on down to the station. We always love to see people, but whatever you do, do it now, because there's a matching fund, and this is a very short drive. It's a 25-hour, one-day drive. Do it now. No procrastination needed. It is the time. 877-500-5266. If you like the thought of us having shorter membership drives, this is a way you can let us know that that's something that you want. 877-500-5266. Call in, make a contribution, bump your EFT up just a little bit, or make a special one-time contribution for this special membership drive. AT?
Make it a K-boom. By calling us, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU. We would love to give you a KABU hoodie. It's got the very militant-looking, very bright design of the socialist-style art. Of course, I'm talking about it. It's a little chunky, a little clunky, but it gets the message across. We've got that on the front of the hoodie. This is a quality hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
And $20 a month allows us to get that steady income. It's very important. I mean, years ago, we used to actually have to go to the bank.
We call it sustaining for a reason.
Yeah. It used to be several times a year. It would be kind of a stress. And we would go into the bank and get enough to get through the next few months. Well, we don't do that anymore. We've gotten on top of things, and the contributors have been very steady, and this monthly contribution is very much a part of that. And so that's what I promote. You can do it any way you like. You can send us a chunk of change. You can add to the amount that you send us if you like, because this is the flash drive and it's just happening for this one day. So I am promoting that as well. 877-500-5266. But getting back to what I was promoting, $10 or $20 a month at that number.
And it doubles your contribution now. Also, KBOO.FM. We've had Jessica from Gaston, Oregon has contributed that way. David from Portland, Paul from Vancouver, Scott from Aurora, Oregon, and Tom from Portland. That's to name but a few. Thank you all so much. And back to the lovely Amy Goodman.
All right. Thank you very much, Lynn and Teresa, and all those recent pledgers. That's sounding great. We go back now to the Amy Goodman speech, and in this segment, Amy discusses more of the year 2011, including the amazing and sad case of Troy Davis.
I thought about labor history and how that played into this. Go back to April 4th, 1968. That fateful day in Memphis, Tennessee, when Dr. King was gunned down. What was he doing in Memphis? He was simply there standing with sanitation workers who were trying to organize a local of AFSCME. And go back a year before that, to the day, April 4th, 1967, Dr. King speaking at the Riverside Church in New York, thousands of people packed in, and he was going to speak against the war in Vietnam. Even his inner circle said, Martin, don't do this. You've got the most powerful person in the world wrapped around your finger, the President of the United States, President Johnson. You got him to sign the Voting Rights Act. You got him to sign the Civil Rights Act. This isn't your war. And King said no. King wanted to take on what he considered the triple threat of racism, materialism, and militarism. And he spoke out. And he said that his country, the country he loved, the United States, was the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. He was excoriated by the corporate press. I mean, I have the Life magazine issue. I mean, Time magazine, Washington Post. They said his speech sounded like a script out of Radio Hanoi. They said he had done a disservice to his cause, his country, and his people. But I want to move forward to the summer of 2011, to the Keystone XL pipeline protests in Washington, D.C. Thousands of people made a ring around the Rose Garden. Thousands of people protested, demanding that President Obama reject the Keystone XL pipeline. 1,200 people got arrested. Among them, it was Naomi Klein's first arrest, the great author and activist who wrote, and you should read all of her books. You know, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate, Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, No Logo, Taking Aim at Brand Bullies. Then jump forward 3 weeks to September 17, 2011. Thousands stream into Zuccotti Park. They occupy Wall Street. The corporate media hardly covered Occupy for about a week. You know, again, the vanishing. You know, the media, this is the media metropolis of the world, New York. The media moguls are going by in their limousines. The elite journalists do. They just don't touch it. But then it got ridiculous, and they had to. I remember Erin Burnett had just started her show Out Front on CNN. Her first piece on Occupy was called Seriously? And that's how the media dealt with it. They mock them. They can't even choose a leader, a spokesperson. It's a leaderful movement. It's not a leaderless movement. Among the signs that were held, many people carried signs that said, I am Troy Davis, and too much doubt. How many of you know who Troy Davis was? Well, let's talk about Troy for a moment, because 4 days later, on September 21st, 2011, Troy Davis was scheduled to die. We were reporting, we went from Zuccotti Park straight to Jackson, Georgia, where Georgia's death row prison is. We're reporting live from the grounds of the death row prison in Jackson, awaiting news about whether the U.S. Supreme Court would spare Troy's life. I Am Troy Davis had become the rallying cry of a growing international movement to stop his execution. The effort had grown and now included not just traditional anti-death penalty activists, but also prosecutors, prison wardens, a former U.S. president, and the Pope. This is the story of a struggle against death that refuses to die. Troy Davis grew up in a middle-class neighborhood in Savannah with his mom, who worked at a local hospital, his father, a carpenter, a veteran of the Korean War, his three sisters and brother. On the night of August 18th, 1989, 18-year-old Troy, African-American, went to Charlie Brown's pool hall with a friend In the parking lot outside, Red Coles, a neighborhood tough, was arguing loudly with a homeless man named Larry Young. Several witnesses testified later Coles pistol whipped Young. Pujol patrons came out to see what was happening. Troy tried to intervene in the fight, but he fled when Coles threatened him with a gun. At a quarter after one in the morning, Mark McPhail, a white off-duty Savannah police officer who was working as a security guard at a Greyhound bus station next door, came outside to break up the fight. Gunshots pierced the summer night. Moments later, McPhail lay dying with a bullet wound to the head and another to the heart. He never drew his gun. Mark McPhail was a hero cop. He tried to save this homeless man. The question was, who killed McPhail? Red Coles immediately raced to the police station with his lawyer and pointed the finger at Troy Davis. So the next day, Troy Davis had gone with his cousin to Atlanta to look for a job, and his face was plastered over all the local media. His family called him and said, Troy, you got to get back here to Savannah, clear this up. His sister, Martina, went to get him. Martina Correa, I've interviewed her so many times, was a heroine. Martina was a Persian Gulf Army nurse who came back to this country diagnosed with breast cancer. Immediately then, she's fighting for all women's lives. Her face adorns the mammogram vans of Savannah to get black women and poor women to get mammograms. In addition, though, to trying to save her own life and women's lives, she then has to fight for her brother's life. She goes to Atlanta, gets him, they come back home, and Troy immediately turns himself in to the Chatham County Sheriff's Office. The teenager thought it was a case of mistaken identity, that he would simply clear up the confusion. Instead, Troy Davis was charged with murder. He was held in jail for 2 years until he was finally tried in 1991. A jury deliberated 2 hours and returned a guilty verdict. On August 30th, 91, Troy Anthony Davis, age 20, was sentenced to die. Davis would spend the next 20 years on death row. During that time, 7 of the 9 non-police witnesses recanted or changed their testimony, some of them alleging police intimidation for their original false statements. One who did not recant was the man many have named as the actual killer, Red Coles. No physical evidence linked Davis to the shooting. So now let's go to September 21st, 2011. There were 3 death warrants against Troy that were vacated within hours of him being executed. This was the 4th. We didn't know what would happen, but we knew we had to be there to broadcast. Now, if we could have been in the death chamber, we would have. I really do think we should see executions in this country. Again, you know, like Mamie Till taught us, show the pictures, show the images, see what it looks like when the prisoner is strapped down on a Christ-like cross, arms and legs, before the injection is put in his arm. See what happens right before the execution when a curtain is pulled back on a window and the audience is watching. See all of this. But we couldn't do that day. But we could broadcast from the prison grounds. So this is the way it was set up in Jackson. There was a pen set up for 150 protesters. Across the street, 1,000 people. Students had come from Morehouse and Spelman, people from all over the world. People were protesting in Iceland and Germany and France and Japan and England. This was massive. No other network was there broadcasting live continuously. We felt it was critical. We did not know what would happen. So we knew. I mean, the satellite trucks were lined up on the periphery of the grounds, but what were they going to do? I mean, if they weren't near the people, but the guards had pushed them there. The reporters didn't protest, though, which surprised me. But, I mean, after all, they're going to, what, play 20 seconds? They're going to maybe broadcast for 30 seconds? That's not what our plan was. Our plan was to go to where the silence was, to speak to the people who had come from around the world. So that day, we hired a satellite truck because we were going to do it like the big boys do it. We got in this truck from Atlanta. We didn't know, you know, who the videographers, the truck operators were, but we were going to be on the grounds. They came up on the grounds and they rolled down the window and they said, "Where do you want the truck, man?" And I said, "Well, you know, the guards are saying we have to put it over there with that line of satellite trucks." They said, "No, where do you want the truck, ma'am?" So I said, "Oh, I want it over there. I want it like right by the protest pen." And they barreled this truck over to the pen. I was starting to warm up to these guys. And so then they get out. The guards come running. You know, they're going to tell them you got to move over there. And these guys got out. They were bigger than the Oshkosh prison guards. And they got out their cameras. And they handed me the microphone. And they formed a kind of protective semicircle around us. And they said, "Where do you want to stand?" I said, "At the rope." And they said, "Start the show." Now, we had gotten the press packet from the Department of Corrections. It was pretty thin. It first talked about the schedule that Troy Davis would be on that day. He could see his family till 3 o'clock, but then they had to clear out because he had to get a routine physical. Routine physical? Like, did it really matter if he had high cholesterol, if they were going to kill him in 4 hours? You know what had happened? A little while before that in Texas, a man on death row had attempted suicide. They raced him to the hospital. They got him better, and then they killed him. The next page talked about what Troy would have for dinner. He had already rejected the special meal, you know, where you can have steak or ice cream sundaes or whatever. But Troy had said no. So the press packet talked about what Troy would get for dinner. It described it in detail. They said he would be offered grilled cheeseburgers, oven brown potatoes, baked beans, coleslaw, cookies, and a grape beverage. Another page listed the lethal cocktail that would follow: pentobarbital, pancuronium bromide, potassium chloride, and Ativan, in parentheses, a sedative. The pentobarbital anesthetizes, the pancuronium bromide paralyzes, and the potassium chloride stops the heart. Davis refused the sedative and the Last Supper. By 7 p.m., the U.S. Supreme Court was reportedly reviewing Davis's plea for a stay. The case was referred to Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who hails from Pinpoint, Georgia, a community founded by freed slaves that's near Savannah, where Troy lived. Needless to say, the Supreme Court denied the plea. Davis's execution began at 10:53 p.m. A prison spokesperson delivered the news to the reporters outside. Time of death, 11:08 p.m. The eyewitnesses to the execution stepped out. According to an Associated Press reporter who was there, these were Troy Davis's final words. He said, "I'd like to address the McPhail family, let you know I'm not the one who killed your son, your father, your brother. I'm innocent. The incident that happened that night is not my fault. I did not have a gun. All I can ask is that you look deeper into this case so that you really can finally see the truth." He said, "I ask my family and friends to continue to fight this fight." And then he turned to his executioners and said, "For those about to take my life, God have mercy on your souls, and may God bless your souls." The state of Georgia took Davis's body to Atlanta for an autopsy, charging his family for the transportation. On Troy Davis's death certificate, the cause of death is listed simply as homicide. As we stood on the grounds of the prison just after Troy Davis was executed, the Georgia Department of Corrections threatened to pull the plug on our broadcast. The show was over. I was reminded of what Mahatma Gandhi reportedly answered when asked what he thought of Western civilization. He said, "I think it would be a good idea."
So, give me your address anyway.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Of course you're listening to KBOO Portland because Troy Davis' execution was not covered in that manner by other media that I am aware of. Democracy Now! By Amy Goodman earlier this morning reported that Philando Castile's family is going to sue, and LeBron James is calling on athletes to condemn police violence. Amy Goodman is very serious about what she does. She gets down to the nitty-gritty. She gets down to the salient points and leaves it to you to consider. There's a contrast I could make, again, with Fox News. They say, "We report, you decide." That could not be more obviously false.
You could make it to OPB if you were feeling like it, and NPR if you were to make that kind of contrast, even if you were feeling like it.
Yeah, funny that. And But KBOO is where you hear this. And so I invite you to join this effort. And this is very much an effort. You know, we really enjoy our music programming. We have many different programs here. It's a very eclectic format. But for me, the part that I concern myself with is trying to get out the news you're not supposed to know, trying to get out news and opinion that simply isn't covered and should be covered by what we call the American media. We are in a matching period right now, and Lynn can tell you about that.
Absolutely. So SSI Shredding has made a very generous offer to match the next $1,000 in donations called in during the Emmy Goodman special. So call in right now at 877-500-5266 and make your donation count double. Make it count double. 877-500-5266. Do not let this opportunity leave you. And it's we're having a flash membership drive. Don't worry, not going to be another 2 weeks of this. It's a flash membership drive. We love it. It's fun. But sometimes we think perhaps y'all would like to have, you lovely listeners, would like to have our drives be a little bit shorter. Let us know by calling in and contributing right now. 877-500-5266. We know you're all major Amy Goodman fans, so this is a great time to do it. This was a wonderful talk that she gave in May. Our KBOO volunteer Theo Burke recorded it for us. So you can, for a $60 minimum donation, have this copy of this for your very own. But however you do it, whatever you contribute, do it now at 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and click on donate, or our mobile app, our new fabulous mobile app, and you can just tap on the donate thing. It's all really easy. It's all really peasy. And now, back to Amy Goodman.
All right. Thank you very much, Lynn. And as we go back to this last segment, Amy Goodman will be discussing all the climate change summits that Democracy Now! Has covered and the Courage Young People at the summit and in the White House collective in World War II.
And then I want to end the year by talking about December 2011, the UN Climate Summit in Durban, South Africa. If you're a regular listener or viewer of Democracy Now!, you know that we have gone to every UN climate summit, from Copenhagen to Cancun, and then to the People's Summit in Cochabamba, Bolivia, to Durban, to Doha, to Poland, to Peru, and finally to Paris this past year. And we go for the full 1 week or 2 weeks, and we broadcast every minute of every hour of Democracy Now! Focused on this critical issue of our day. But you might ask, given what happens within these climate summits, why waste the fuel? Because we don't just broadcast what happens within. We broadcast what happens outside, when thousands of people come desperately from every part of the planet, the most endangered parts, most threatened by climate change, to plead their case, particularly to the historically greatest greenhouse gas emitter in the world, the United States. You know, the 15-year-old boy from the Maldives who said, "My country will be submerged," to the people of sub-Saharan Africa who talk about the desertification of their continent, the cooking of a continent. And these are the voices that need to be heard. They're the uninvited guests. They're not accredited inside. The movement around climate change is so much more advanced in the rest of the world. Yeah, they have debates around what to do about climate change. In this country, we have debates about whether human beings have anything to do with climate change. I mean, it is astounding. The science is settled. It's as if every time we talked about the planet Earth, we brought on someone from the Flat Earth Society for balance. I mean, meteorologists should not be able to get whatever those certificates are if they don't flash, in addition to the words severe weather and extreme weather, the words climate change or global warming. It's not just about tuning into television, radio to figure out what to wear. It's to figure out what to do with an issue that will determine the fate of the planet. So in this year, the climate summit was in Durban, and something unusual happened. At the end of the summit, some of the people on the outside were invited in. And they were the youth who had come from around the planet. And they chose as their spokesperson a young college student named Anjali Upadhyay, who went to College of the Atlantic. And Anjali got up and addressed the world body. She said, "I speak for more than half the world's population. We are the silent majority. You've given us a seat in this hall, but our interests are not on the table. What does it take to get a stake in this game? Lobbyists, corporate influence, money? You've been negotiating all of my life. You've failed to meet pledges. You've missed targets. You've broken promises, but you've heard this all before. We're in Africa, home to communities on the front line of climate change. The science tells us we have 5 years max. You're saying, give us 10. The starkest betrayal of your generation's responsibility to ours is that you call this ambition. Where is the courage in these rooms? Now is not the time for incremental action. In the long run, these will be seen as the defining moments of an era in which narrow self-interest prevailed over science, reason, and common compassion." She said, "There is real ambition in this room, but it's been deemed as radical, deemed not politically possible. Stand with Africa. Long-term thinking is not radical. What's radical is to completely alter the planet's climate, to betray the future of my generation and to condemn millions to death by climate change. What's radical is to write off the fact that change is within our reach. 2011 was the year in which the silent majority found their voice, the year when the bottom shook the top. 2011 was the year when the radical became reality." And then she quoted Nelson Mandela, who said, "It always seems impossible until it's done." And so she looked out on the crowd of faces, the scientists, the world leaders, the delegates, the bureaucrats, and said, "So distinguished delegates and governments around the world, governments of the developed world, deep cuts now, get it done." And Democracy Now! Was the only national or global broadcast to broadcast this and so much more of what happened inside and outside that and every climate summit. Yes, we need a media that tells the truth, that's there on the ground. We live in a high-tech digital age, yet all the corporate media gives us is static, that veil of distortion and lies and misrepresentations and half-truths that obscure reality, when what we need the media to give us is the dictionary definition of static, criticism, opposition, unwanted interference. We need a media that covers power, not covers for power. We need a media that is the fourth estate, not for the state. And we need a media that covers the movements that create static and make history. So I wanted to end with one last very small story, going back to where I began in World War II, where I began this talk. And that's to a group of people called the White Rose Collective. They were a brother and sister named Hans and Sophie Scholl, who together with their professor and other students and workers decided they would form the White Rose Collective. They weren't Jewish, they were German Christians, and they thought, what could they do in the face of the Nazi atrocity? And they decided they could get out information so that the Germans would never be able to say they didn't know. So they published a series of 6 pamphlets. On one of them were written the words, "We will not be silent." They got them distributed everywhere, under cover of night, and alleyways, and market places, and schoolyards. And then they were captured, Hans and Sophie and their professor. They were captured, they were charged, they were convicted, and they were beheaded. But that philosophy, that motto, should be the Hippocratic Oath of the media today, should be the Hippocratic Oath of us all today. We will not be silent. Democracy Now!
And that was Amy Goodman speaking on May 14th here in Portland. It was a recording done by Theo Burke. And you have just a few minutes left with our matching period, 877-500-5266, to contribute. Soon we're going to be going to live a broadcast at Fire at Fire in the Mountain, where Shocks of Sheba will be regaling you with tons of reggae. But right now, Terry, who renewed from Beaverton, Ryan is starting a new monthly contribution. Melissa called to increase her monthly contribution, something you could do. And Bonnie renewed from Southeast Portland. These are join the mighty few. Those of us at KVU, 877-500-5266, and contribute to our 25-hour flash drive.
And their pledges are doubled, isn't that right?
That's right. It's a double. It's a matching period.
How's that work?
It means that until for one more minute, if you call in with a pledge, it will be matched to, it will be matched double up to $1,000. We wouldn't spit at a $1,000 contribution, I tell you right now.
I would not spit, I tell you. Well, Amy Goodman said it all. She says that we need a media that tells the truth, that's there on the ground. And, oh, there it is. It's the doubling music.
About that phone number, 877-5. Meanwhile, back to schedule
pitching. This is magic, I'm telling you.
877-500-5266. Or go to kboo.fm, we're fine like that. Or go to our great new mobile app and tap on donate there. But it's really fun to call. 877-500-5266 makes this matching period go for us. And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And by Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting an evening of reggae music with Ziggy Marley Live and Steel Pulse, Thursday, August 4th at the Oregon Zoo. Doors open at 5, show starts at 7, and tickets